Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
This is another Thursday evening. This is, of course, LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with Bob Brill. We have Jerry's here with us.
Hi.
And Bobby Jean Bell on the other line.
Hello.
And we have another guest on the line, but I have to tell you whose music that was before everybody wonders where that came from. That actually is from Jacek Mentel. It's Bram Stoker's Dracula. It is the opening sequence to the movie. And I could just, I mean, I couldn't find anything about Elizabeth. So Dracula got the call.
She's not musical. We could find a lot about her, but not musical.
Exactly.
I actually recognized that.
Did you?
I recognized it. Yeah, I did, but I have the soundtrack, so kind of a nerd over here. So
it's a great piece of music.
It totally is.
It's a great piece of music. Well, let's get this thing on the road. We've got a few commercials we're going to do tonight, and actually, I have a new contributor tonight. Actually, it's if I can find it, there we go. Tosca, you'll know this name very well.
Okay.
When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. Creative Edge, your brand, your future. So you should recognize that name, Tosca?
I recognize that, absolutely.
Oh, good. Yep. Oh, okay. Now we have the Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rock Mount Ranchwear, Scully Leather, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. So shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com, enter code WB100, that's for Writer's Block, and receive $10 off in your order, or you can call them if you're really into talking to people live, 877-340-9378. So that's Out West Shop, and okay. Well, tonight's guest is that we've been talking to her, so apparently somebody knows who she is. We know who she is. Well, let's say she is. Her name is Tosca Lee. She is an award-winning and, of course, a New York Times best-selling author of the House of Bathory duology, The Progeny and Firstborn, Iscariot, The Legend of Sheba, Demon. A memoir, Hava, The Story of Eve, and the Books of Mortals series with New York Times bestseller Ted Decker, Forbidden, Mortal, and Sovereign. A notorious night owl. Oh, my God. I just love this part. Tosca, God bless you. She loves watching TV, eating bacon. Eating bacon. Playing video games and football with her kids and sending cheesy texts to her husband.
Good for you, Tosca.
You can find have chocolate on it.
You can find chocolate covered bacon. You can find Tosca at www.toscalee.com, on social media, or hanging around the snack table. And be sure to check out Is Minnie, the free e-short prequel to The Legend of Sheba. And of course, if you're a bacon connoisseur, you can always find Tosca around the bacon bin. Okay, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Miss Tosca Lee.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to bring it. You know, it seems to be that the Writer's Block now is like becoming the New York Times best-selling author. I mean, God, how many have we had? A lot.
A couple just the last few weeks.
I know. We're getting to big-time guys now.
And you're welcome.
And Jerry the bookie is sitting right here saying you're welcome and thank you. She keeps us booked up. We are actually booked up through the end of the year. Tosca, your story,
Hello.
The progeny, is phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
And I say that with a capital P.
A joy to write. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And the Firstborn, which is the sequel to it, it's out last year?
Yes, it was out last year, and it came out in paperback this year.
Okay. So, and it's the story of, why don't you give us a brief rundown of the story, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, The Progeny is the first book. Firstborn is the sequel. It's the story of a young girl named Audra Ellison, and she has, at the beginning of The Progeny, elected to erase the last 2 years of her memory. She doesn't know exactly why. She's protecting a powerful secret. She starts over in the backwoods of Maine, and she thinks maybe she's in the witness protection program or something like that, but she quickly learns that she's a descendant of Elizabeth Bathory, and she's being hunted by the descendants of Elizabeth Bathory's descendants. And Elizabeth Bathory is actually a historical figure. She is attributed to being the most prolific female serial killer of all time, and she has apparently killed over 600 young women or so. And so anyway, Audra is starting over, and she is a descendant of Elizabeth Bathory, and she goes on the run. She's being hunted, and the story takes off from there, and she ends up running through the undergrounds of Europe. And it's a breakneck run for your life.
It truly is.
That it is.
That it true. And I mean, through what? How many? Oh, one, two, three, four Eastern European, countries?
A few. And you know, the thing is, when I was researching this book, I took my mom with me. So we went all these places and had a ball. But it's four or five countries. Yep.
Yeah, but you didn't have the hunters looking for you.
Well, as far as you know.
Well, I don't know.
So I have to ask you, Tosca, where did the impetus for this book come from? I mean, where did you come up with this idea to do this?
What's that?
Where did you come up with the idea to do this? What was the impetus for this book?
So the story of Elizabeth Bathory, so she is actually a historical figure. She did live at the end of the 1500s. And it was a fan of mine who suggested, why don't you do a story about her? And I had done some historical novels recently, but I wanted to do something contemporary, and I wanted to do a thriller. So fortunately for me, she is the kind of person who has led the life that would lend itself very well to a mythology. She was, you know, some people call her the female Dracula. So she works very well for that. So I wrote the story of her modern-day descendants, and it came from the fan.
Well, the interesting thing
I have to say, Bob, you know, Jim, you might need to turn Bob's mic up. I can hardly hear him.
Bob?
Yeah. That a little better?
Sorry.
That's okay. I can barely hear me.
Oh, there. How's that? Better?
That's
a little better.
That's better.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I thought of was, when I was reading this, was Vlad the Impaler, you know?
Right.
And so I was kind of interested to hear you say that.
Well, absolutely. And she is, she's a contemporary of his. She's just a little bit later. But absolutely. And that's why she's been called the female Dracula. So that's totally correct on your part.
Well, there you go. And my music was perfect.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, totally.
But what's interesting to me, yes, Tosca, this book was, I think we all agree, was absolutely breathtaking. And I don't think I took a breath until I finished reading it.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Elizabeth, of course, from what we learn about her, and then I did go online and learned some more stuff, you know, she's really certainly not a very nice person. And yet the descendants seem to be, you know, they're challenged because they're being hunted, but they're not the evil. They didn't seem to inherit her evil trend, her evil traits.
That's right.
And I was curious, why you chose to portray them the way that you do.
Well, Elizabeth Bathory is a really fascinating character. I mean, she's best known as the most prolific female serial killer of all time. But when you study her life and you see that she was prolific in four languages, she was a big supporter of the church, she was a doting mom. I mean, it kind of starts to smack of conspiracy theory a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
And, yeah, and I love a great conspiracy theory. So as I was reading and learning about this and writing the story, you know, I was thinking, I don't know if Hollywood got this right. I don't know if history got this right. I think that there's something else going on, because when Elizabeth Bathory was walled up in her castle and basically she wasn't executed, she was treated as though she never existed. That was her sentence, basically, for 4 years. I think, you know, there was something else going on, because the Habsburg king that owed her a lot of money ended up becoming the Holy Roman Emperor, and then her descendants were banished and all this stuff happened. And if you've read my other historical novels, I always think there's something else going on. So.
Well, it usually is so.
You dangle lots of great clues.
There's a reason right there for walling her up in the tower, because he owed her money.
I think so. And it's really interesting, because they couldn't just kill her because she was a noble woman.
Right.
So they walled her up, and for 4 years she lived that way, and finally she died. And then the king became the Holy Roman Emperor after that. But until then, he owed her a great sum of money. But, you know, according to Hollywood and legend and all this stuff, you know, she was the blood countess, and she murdered all these young women. And, you know, there's this terrible legend about her.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there might be something else.
Do you liken her to Lizzie Borden at all?
Sorry?
Do you liken her to Lizzie Borden at all?
To Lizzie Borden? Mm-hmm. You know, I liken her. I just think that she's one of those many women who have been kind of the victim of circumstance. And in her case, a very rich, very educated woman who had a lot of money. And I think that worked against her.
Yeah.
So I used her as the mythology for the characters in the novel. And so the characters in the novel are her descendants. And I think it created a very fascinating mythology.
Right, right. Well, you don't ever really say how many progeny there are. I'm sure there are many, many, many more than Audra, whose name actually, when she got her memory erased, was Emily.
Mm-hmm.
That's where everybody gets confused. You have Emily and Audra, and
that's right.
Yeah, and then you have Then you have Luca, who started out as a bad guy or a good guy, went to a bad guy, and then a good guy again.
That's
and then
right.
we find out a whole Absolutely. Bunch of stuff about Luca. And then we find out about the other guy that was, she was, what was his name?
Roland?
Oh, Roland. And Roland. He started out as a good guy, went to a bad guy, and went to a good guy again. Wow.
I kind of like switching from the bad guy to the good guy thing, if you haven't noticed.
I did notice.
A crazy thing I learned while I was writing this. So my mother is a lifelong genealogist. And one thing that I learned while I was doing this is that I am actually distantly related to Elizabeth Bathory.
Oh.
That's why you're sympathetic.
So the story now becomes crystal clear.
Yeah, I do have to
That's
ask you
right.
this.
I am progeny. Yeah. No, I mean, so I've written about a dozen novels or so, and I was talking with my mom one day, and I was like, "Here's what my new thing is," and she's like, "Oh, you know that we are actually distant related to her," and I said, "No, I did not know that." So that was weird.
So you may have had hunters after you in Europe. You don't know.
Yeah, as far as you know, and I might have special superpowers too.
Well, okay, everybody, don't piss her off.
Yeah, right. So I have to ask you, were you a big fan of the TV show ER?
ER? Mm-hmm. Oh, I loved ER. Well, you're talking.
That's
about
where
ER
Luca
was,
came from. I know that.
That's right.
Oh, Luca.
Luca, wait.
Oh, Luca.
Yeah. Or actually, Godfather Luca Brasi.
Yeah, but after that, the guy was from Croatia.
Oh,
Luca's
yeah.
Luca's from Croatia, and the whole scene.
Well,
Luca,
there
wait.
Were Croatians in this book because Croatia was part of the Habsburg Empire,
right.
actually. So,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She was a fascinating woman, Elizabeth Bathory. She's, mm-hmm. I mean, I think at one point they said that she had killed over 650 mm-hmm. young women, yes. and actually young men as well.
There was a young girl who reported that.
And then they
she
said that she bathed their blood
and some young women.
Yeah.
And that she had chronicled this in her diary, though her diary has never been found.
Well, I think that you found it in a book.
Creepy stuff. I mean, it's never technically been found in the book. They're searching for it.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, you know, we've never found it.
Huh.
But, you know, of course, I think maybe that's not quite correct. So,
somebody has it. Somebody knows where it is. Don't you think?
Somebody knows where it is. Well, and also nobody knows exactly where she's been buried. So the Bathorys, I mean, her family had 20 castles, and nobody has ever found exactly where she was buried.
Wow.
So,
well, there were some really fun things that you do. You know, you give us some symbols. It's not anything like the Da Vinci Code. I don't mean to connect them, but it's that lure of the clues that you give us as they discover, you know, what's on her back, and we go into a church and we look at the stained glass windows, and that all has some significance. Mm-hmm. And I wondered a little about your research and, like, how long did it take you to did you work on one project at a time? Were you working on just this book? Where you dedicated your time totally to that project, and how long did it take you to research it?
Yeah, absolutely. I only do one book at a time. So I took my mom. My mom is a big traveling person. So I was like, you want to go over to the ancient Habsburg Empire? And she was like, yes, I'm packing right now. So she was ready to go. So we went over. That's what we did. And we were in Hungary, Croatia and Bratislava and some other places, but in Hungary, and we were near the Ukrainian border. And, I mean, so close that people were like, why would you want to go there? There's nothing there. But there was this church there that was part of the scene, the scene that you're talking about. And that is exactly true. And if you go on to Pinterest and you look me up, it's Tosca Lee, then there's the real life progeny, and there are pictures from the scene. So you can see the church, you can see the windows, you can see everything. And this is all true to life stuff. And there's this, the scene that you're referring to is where the sun is going one direction, but the windows seem to tell a story
right.
the other direction. And that is absolutely true. And I remember leaving, and I told our guide, I said, can you please call back and confirm that this is actually the way it happened, because this is so unusual. And she called back and she's like, yes, that's exactly the way it works. The story goes this direction. So if you go on to Pinterest, you can see the pictures of the actual place.
And yeah, it goes backwards.
That is the truth. Yes, it goes backwards.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, it's totally, completely interesting. Yeah. Absolutely.
Did you have a hard time communicating over there?
Well, I had an interpreter, and I had a a tour guide. We had hired kind of a private person, and we had a car driver whose name was Attila. So that's a very common name.
Oh, Attila, come on.
I used to have a Sharpay. I used to have this Sharpay dog, and his name was Attila. But our driver over there was named Attila. So we were over there just west of the Ukrainian border with a driver named Attila and a tour guide that was talking to the guy at the church there who was, you know, basically saying, why would you want to come here? Because nobody else comes here. So,
interesting. The last couple authors we've talked to who set their stories in foreign countries were doing a lot of their research on Google Earth because they talked about, you know, not having the time necessarily or the financing to be able to go and actually, you know, visit the places they were writing about. And we all thought that was real interesting. So that's fascinating that you actually were able to just, you know, pack up and go and see these places firsthand.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the first thing is I love to travel. My mom loves to travel. You know, I was engaged to get married at the time, but my husband wasn't able to go, and so it was my mother and I. But I have written stories like stories about the Queen of Sheba, for instance, which is happening in Yemen, and I couldn't go there at the time because of the war. So. You know, but I always do try to go if possible. So, the Yemen one with the Queen of Sheba was very unfortunate. I would have loved to have gone there.
Hmm. So when you went to Croatia, and I'm assuming you did go to Croatia, right?
Yes, I did.
And what years did you go? It was after the Balkans Wars, but I was kind of
It was in 2015. So we were in the Zagreb area mostly. And then we went eastward into Hungary. And gosh, if you've never been to Croatia, it is beautiful. You should completely go there. I mean, there's a beautiful coast there. They don't have sandy beaches. They have these rocky, pebbly beaches.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about.
And the Adriatic Ocean.
Because my Italian relatives would go there early 2000s because it was becoming the place to vacation. It was becoming more of a tourist area.
Absolutely.
And I was kind of wondering what your impressions were of that.
I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was a great value. I thought the people were fantastic. And it's really interesting because when you're used to going to the beach, you're used to seeing sand and that kind of thing. But it's not sand, it's pebbly. And this Adriatic Ocean is just fantastic. So
cold though, huh?
It's completely worthwhile. Well, you know, I didn't get in. I was kind of a wimp. I didn't get in.
Okay, now the big question for the night. Did they have bacon?
Did they have bacon?
Well, of course they
pancetta. Pancetta.
You know, I wrote the story of Judas Iscariot and I was in Israel for a few weeks and I was staying at these very kosher hotels. And it was very difficult because after a while, I realized I would have knocked off someone's grandma to like bacon after a while. So, and I felt like a bad person after that. So, but in Croatia, there are pork products. So
Well, you know, in Israel, all you have to do is have the restaurateur call it kosher bacon and they can give it to you.
Yeah, well, now you tell me. Thanks a lot. I needed to know this before.
Well, you know, some things you learn later.
And I learned, too, like when you're down by the Dead Sea, like you can't get a cheeseburger because, you know, it's not okay to have dairy and meat together. So, yeah, you can have a burger, but you can't have a cheeseburger.
Can you buy the cheese separately and put it on yourself?
I tried and no.
Wow. Strict.
Yeah, no.
Could you put bacon on it?
Well, I didn't try that.
No pork there either.
But, you know, after floating on the Dead Sea all day, you know, you're willing to make some compromises. So.
Well, that must have been interesting.
That has to make it feel funny, floating on the Dead Sea.
It is pretty awesome. Like, you cannot drown because it's so salty.
Yeah.
You're buoyant. So,
Well, it's like salt and sea out here. Except that's right. The Fisher did too.
So, what was your favorite part of this trip? I mean, there had to be one highlight that stood out amongst everything when you're doing the research.
Okay, well, I am all about the food.
Oh, so,
good for you. Okay.
Oh, we have some Turkish delight. Would you like some? It's right here.
I'm all about the food. So, I think we were in Hungary, and when you're in Hungary.
You're hungry.
You never go hungry.
I like pate and I like foie gras. Yep. And you can get it very inexpensively there. Whereas over here, it's kind of a delicacy and it's more expensive.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed having foie gras. I loved having it with like Hungarian goulash. I loved just having the food. You know, if you want to learn about a culture, go eat the food. Smell the smells, see the sights, but eat the food. So
uh-huh.
That's what I love.
So is your next book going to be a cookbook or foods of the world?
I would love that.
Actually, the restaurant killers.
Bacon.
Yeah.
The bacon.
The restaurant killers.
The bacon
I've
killers.
I've got bacon in my next book, but it is a thriller. So,
yeah. You can take it. You can make it happen in Italy. Yeah, come on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The slogan of my next book is Save the Bacon, Save the World. So
seriously?
Yeah, for real.
For real.
Tosca, at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned you were at a writer's conference. Can we ask, where are you? What conference are you attending?
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm at a conference called Realm Makers. And Realm Makers is for sci-fi and speculative, so that's sci-fi fantasy writers. And so it's kind of like a Comic-Con happening out here. And so these are all writers of fantasy and science fiction. Mm-hmm. And it was my privilege today to write to teach the pre-session with these authors. And it was amazing. And there are so many amazing stories waiting to be told. And mm-hmm. they have so many stories brewing right now, getting ready to be published. So I'm excited.
That's very exciting.
Thank so you. your second book, the sequel to The Progeny, mm-hmm. how far do you take us into the future, or is it almost immediate?
So The Progeny and Firstborn, so those two books are actually, I think, my ninth and tenth books, actually. And so The Firstborn actually picks up exactly where The Progeny ends.
Okay.
Minute where The Progeny leaves off. So when I wrote The Progeny, I finished it and I was like, yay, that's done. And then I left it for a few months and then I was like, okay, now I have to solve that puzzle. And I came back to it and I was like, oh no. What do I do now?
Well, we won't tell anybody the ending of The Progeny because it's quite a surprise.
It is.
Well, yeah. But that's the fun part. Do you remember in the 80s when it was like all about who shot JR?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I do. Oh, yes.
Yes. So we don't have that these days because people like to binge stuff and we have that instant gratification. But, okay, I'm giving away my age now, but back in the 80s or whatever year it was, you know, we had to wait to see who shot JR, and I thought that was kind of fun and exciting. So,
except that it didn't make any sense when you found out who it was.
Well, no.
Well,
but
of course it didn't make sense. The fun was.
But we were talking about it all summer, weren't we?
Oh yeah. Well, I never watched it, so.
They would bring on like these specialists and these FBI people and they would give their opinion and everybody was wondering who did it and then we would all tune in to see who did it.
And then it turned out to be Mary Crosby.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like not who you thought.
Yeah, but I like the sequel to that on The Simpsons, who shot Mr. Burns.
Oh, well, see, I don't watch The Simpsons. I don't even know what channel it's on.
That was the best show on TV at one time.
The Simpsons?
The Simpsons, yes.
Oh, my God, Bob.
Gosh. They live under the dome and there's donuts. That's all you need
That's
to
all
know.
You need.
That's all you need to know?
Beer.
Beer. Yeah.
So well, as you were writing The Progeny, were there any surprises for yourself as you were going along? Or did you all kind of have it all, you know, storyboarded out and you knew where you were going? Or were you surprised?
You know, I do plot to a certain extent. The thing I didn't know when I took that on, because the fans suggested it, was that I was related to Elizabeth Bathory. So that was the biggest thing. And then at the end, you know, I kind of left it on a cliffhanger because I think that's fun. Maybe not everybody thinks that's fun, but I do. Yeah. And then I wrote the next one. So I think the kind of personal relationship to Elizabeth Bathory was the big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I'm going to take a couple minutes here, and we're going to do a commercial, and we'll be back to you. Don't go away. Wherever you are, don't move, because you're coming in really clear. So hang tough. We'll be back to you in just a second. I'm not even going to put you guys on pause. Here you go. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. Well, the dogs, of course. I mean, it's the dog commercial. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. That is alldogsrule.com or 805-524-1100. And it is 7:30. We are on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the Writer's Block, and we're on the phone with Tosca Lee, the author of his terrific book, The Progeny, and her sequel, which is Firstborn. So let's get into a little bit of process here, Tosca. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
When you write, like most writers, you have a specified time that you like to sit down and do your creativity. Do you prefer the morning and the evening? Do you prefer just catch-as-catch-can during the day? How do you do it?
Well, you know, I'm a big proponent of the fact that everybody's different. So the best thing you can do is figure out how you work best. For me, I tend to work best at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I do it. And I am diagnosed OCD, so I tend to work quite obsessively. I don't have good discipline, but I kind of wait until the last few months until my book is due, and then I work very hard.
Ah.
Until it's time to turn it in.
Gotcha.
So, but I do think that the key is to figure out what works best for you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's a good answer. How many do you have? Do you have a word count that you try to get done a week or a day?
Well, I try to get about 10 pages done a day if possible.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, I married a farmer and a single father, and I became an insta-mom of four. Mm-hmm. So I have four children now. So I'm balancing that with my writing.
So that was like get married, add water, and now you have four kids.
But you know what? My life has never been better. And the funny thing is, I was up there the other day. I write in the attic of the farmhouse, and I'm up there. And when I'm writing, I act out the stuff, and I'm saying the dialogue out loud. Mm. And I'm like, man, you know, and I'm typing, and I'm typing it out. And I turn around, I look out the window, and there's a drone, like, floating outside my window, like...
A drone?
Like, spying on me.
Oh, my gosh.
My husband. And they're, like, all peeking in on me, like, seeing what I'm doing. And I'm up there, like, making faces and typing stuff and acting it out. So that's my life.
Oh, my gosh. There's a story in that.
Why don't you share the video?
Yeah, well,
come on.
You know, it was right before the 4th of July, and they were out there doing fireworks and stuff, and they had the drone out. So you never know what's going to happen when you have three boys living in your house.
Well, that brings up an interesting question, because you wrote alone before, and now you have four children around, and do they add or subtract to your writing process or your character development now that you're seeing something else close up that maybe you can draw from?
Exactly. And, you know, I used to write until about 6 or 7 in the morning. And now by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, I'm kind of like, I'm tired. Because, you know, I'm a mom with children now. So I'm kind of pooped out. So things change a little bit. But it's all good. But when I'm working, I tend to do it kind of obsessively. And that's the thing that I work on. And and then in between books, I'm not writing very much.
Have you been able to draw anything for your writing from their characters? I mean, them. I mean, your characters from them is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you know, I do have a book coming out in January called The Line Between, and it is a book about a disease that comes out from the melting permafrost, and the main character in that book is named after my stepdaughter, and her name is Winter. So that would kind of be the biggest thing. But some of the adventures, I don't know if I could ever put them in a book, but they are really, really funny. So kids are funny. You know, I just never realized, you know, like bubble wrap is funny, farts are funny. Like, you know, having kids is funny.
Uh-huh. So. Farts are funny. They are funny.
You know, I was the title of the book I was going to write. I'm dead
serious. Farts are funny?
Farts are
you
funny.
You have 3 boys at home, right?
I had 2 boys at home, and farts were funny.
That's why I'm a proponent of the hat that says who farted.
How old are your kids?
Well, today they are 23. That's my daughter, Winter, and she's my protagonist is named after her in my next novel. And 17, that's my oldest son, and 13-year-old boy twins.
So farts are funny.
And they are always at each other's throats, so
well,
I don't know how they ever made it in the womb.
That's siblings, though. You can't get away from that.
Yeah.
No, that's my kids are in their 40s, so, and they still fight.
It's been funny. Yeah, yeah. So when you've never had kids before and you suddenly come into 4 of them when you get married and marry a single father like I did,
yeah,
life is great.
Half of the Brady Bunch.
Speaking of, their house is for sale. We'll go through that later.
Yesterday, yeah.
Anyway, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
Had 4 kids.
Well, you know,
4 kids.
I think writer's block is just kind of code for not knowing what to do next. And when that happens, one of the things that I love to do is I love to journal from the first-person point of view of my main character. So get out my pen and paper. I journal from my main character's point of view, page after page. I don't let my hand stop. I just keep my hand moving, you know, 3-4 pages like that. After that, you're not going to be stuck after that. So.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
That's a first.
That's a first.
That's a first. Yeah, that's the first I've heard that
one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've heard all kinds of them, but that's a first for that one.
Well, if you journal as your main character, you're in that vein. So, yeah.
Huh.
You're in there.
I actually wrote a book that the start of each chapter was a journal entry. And then the chapter went back and went through the entire day.
Love it.
Yeah.
Johnny Yuma, the Rebel.
No. Bugles no. Bugles in the Sun.
No, I'm saying.
Yeah, Bugles in the
Johnny Yuma was a journalist.
Johnny Yuma was a rebel.
Yes, he was.
Okay. I'm glad we had that talk.
Do you normally write in your other books, were you also writing from the main character's point of view as you were in Progeny?
You know, I really do enjoy writing from first person. So I've done it for... I wrote a book about the story of Eve. I wrote a book about Judas Iscariot and the Queen of Sheba, and then the Progeny and Firstborn, and now the book coming out in January called The Line Between is also written in first person. And I like it because it's very intimate, and you become that person. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm of the opinion that when people read, they read to escape. They want to get away from their lives. They need to escape for a while from whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a great main character, it's like going to Disneyland, and you're getting in that, you know, that vehicle that you climb inside when you're in Disneyland, and that vehicle takes you on the trip. And so, yeah, I love that. Absolutely.
When you first started writing first person, was that difficult for you to sell to your publisher? Because a lot of publishers don't like it.
No, actually, I know that it's kind of unusual, but it wasn't. And, you know, I used to be a gamer and I used to be a role player, and that's kind of how I learned the characterization and writing. So it was never really weird for me, but I think it actually strengthened my writing. So, yeah, no, my publisher is always kind of welcomed that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, the story, writing the story of Judas Iscariot from first person was very weird and daunting, and, you know, who would want to do that? But, yeah, it worked out really well.
Well, that and the fact that you're writing first person of a different sex.
Yeah, well, there's that. Well, you know, I think when you're writing, it's kind of like acting. I mean, you're acting, but you're acting on paper.
Well, that, so yeah.
You have to be able to act that out and do it, which is why it's really embarrassing when you're up in the attic and the drone shows up and they're spying on you and you're acting.
We're back to the drone.
Yeah, so, because you're making faces and you're talking to yourself, so, but, yeah.
Wow. Bobby Jean, you started to say something. And
well, I was just thinking, this book is so rich with the atmosphere, the areas. You give us so much history. And because it's coming in the first person, I was just sort of thinking through, we get all of what we need because she's so great at the dialogue she has. She's great at asking questions and, you know, getting what she needs. But then you also have us seeing things on the phone, or she sees something on the TV. She's, you know, Ivan's truck or the car on the ferry. I was just thinking about when it's first person, it seems like it's harder, might be harder to get all the pieces we need. But actually, you do this so well that this is all what she gleans, and she gets it and passes it to us.
Well, thank you. Well, first person can be very difficult because you're very limited in your point of view because you only have the one person.
Correct.
So that is the challenge. But that said, that's kind of the fun of the mystery because you only see, you know, what's happening to that, you know, again, you're back in that Disneyland vehicle. You only see what's happening in that vehicle that you're riding in. So that is kind of the fun of it to me. It's not the same as when you read a book and it's in third person and there's two or three characters going back and forth and stuff. So whatever's happening to that first person, you know, that's all you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of fun.
Well, that's what Craig Johnson said, too. We interviewed Craig Johnson. He's the originator of Longmire. And he's big first person author, and he prefers it that way. And he said that you get to know your character in a first-person sense, and that's the only thing you know. Everyone else is on the side.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I always advise authors when they're writing novels and they feel a little stuck or they've taken some time away and they have to come back and they're not sure how to pick things back up, you know, to journal from the point of view of their main character.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing in first person, though, you have a little bit of an advantage because it's very easy to slip into that skin and kind of pick up because you are that person.
Mm-hmm.
You are that person. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What do you like to read? What do you like to read?
Oh, gosh. You know, I've been reading a book lately by Blake Crouch called Dark Matter, and he's the author of Wayward Pines, which was...
We kind of got into that series, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that when I found the book. I just found this book called Dark Matter, and I actually wrote to him and sent him fan mail, and... You know, by the way, that's really important to do. If you love an author's work, you should write to that author and let them know because they may be very successful, but I think the assumption is if you're super successful, you don't need to hear that anymore, and you absolutely need to hear that. So it was my pleasure to write to him, and he actually wrote me back and thanked me, but loved Dark Matter. And also Brad Meltzer's The Escape Artist. I've been reading that. And... Bill Clinton and James Patterson have a book out called The President is
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's exciting too. So those are the books on my radar right now.
Ah. What advice, if any, do you have for beginning or starting authors?
Oh, lots of advice. The first one is try to attend a writer's conference if you can, because you need a tribe and you need people, and you need people to support you and be with you on this journey. You know, it doesn't work as a lone ranger. You need your people. And my second piece of advice is to write like no one will ever read this. And the reason I say that is because even though you're writing hopefully for publication and for other people to read it, the only way to be totally authentic and to leave all that worry behind of being rated like another blender on Amazon is to write like you're writing secret stuff in your closet by yourself. And that's where the good stuff comes out.
It's like so dance like no one's walking, watching. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah,
absolutely. You can fix it later. You can censor it later. But right now, right, like, it's totally secret stuff.
Terrific.
Yeah.
We're going to be running out of time here pretty quick. You want to give our audience where they can get a hold of you and or send you an email, look up your website, Facebook,
absolutely.
Twitter, all that good
absolutely.
Stuff?
Absolutely. I'm on all that stuff as Tosca Lee. So it's T-O-S-C-A-L-E-E. I have a book coming out in January called The Line Between. And, yeah, I'm at toscalee.com and on Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, all that stuff.
Cool. Well, yeah, you know what? I think you've picked up some fans here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
So we don't have to send you a fan letter, though. We'll just tell you in person.
Yeah.
What a wonderful story.
Exactly. And you know what? If we have writers out there, I do a newsletter for writers. So just go to my newsletter and sign up for my newsletter because
okay.
I will tell you my best advice about writing.
Oh, good enough. Well, Tosca, thank
Absolutely.
You for taking the time out of your evening there in good old St. Louis, Missouri. And that's actually Jerry's
so
family's from
me.
There. Well, somewhere close to there.
Kansas City.
And, of course, the breakfasts in that part of the country
are tremendous, and they have bacon.
Yes. Barbecue.
Yeah.
Barbecue.
Lots of it.
Barbecue and bacon.
Yep.
Right. Holy crap. You're like barbecue in like Flint. Well, thanks for spending the time with us. I'm glad you like your mug.
Absolutely. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. That's such a nice gift. I've never received anything like that, so thank you so much
for
that.
You're very welcome. What makes you want to come back?
That's special. I would love to come back.
Well, you just get a hold of Jerry or tell your bum agent up there in Saskatchewan that you want
Mickey.
To come back.
We love
Mickey.
Will
well, he, you know what? He's my publicist, too, so I love Mickey.
He's easy to work with, I have to tell you.
He is extremely easy to work with.
Worked with a lot of people, but Mickey's
he's
the
wonderful.
Best. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
And thank you again for joining us, and I hope you have the rest of your evening as fun, and go have a glass of wine, and if we were there, we'd buy you one, but we're not.
Well, I will do that. I will buy one for myself on you.
Good girl. Thanks again, Tosca.
Thank you so much. You have a good night.
You do as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And Tosca Lee. Wow.
Actually, the bar closes in an hour, so.
Oh. Terrific writer.
Nice lady.
Well, it's funny to find out, you know, you're writing about someone, then you find out you're related to them.
I know, huh?
Yeah.
or you look up and there's your husband standing there with a drone.
Well, you know, she makes a comment in the book about all the DNA testing, you know, you see
right.
all these ads, and I often wonder, like, who else will know now about me, you know?
Yeah.
You know, now it becomes, like, it's not private anymore, you know?
Right.
Actually, we did the ancestry.
We did ancestry DNA.
Yeah, and I have, like, 1,000 relatives I didn't know I had and never been invited to the family reunion, so go figure.
You don't like crowds.
No, I don't like crowds, but... I found out I'm from my ancestry. I thought it was strictly German, and there's some German, France, Spain, the UK, Wales, Scotland, Finland.
Yeah,
I didn't know. I didn't know.
I did mine in Southern Italy and or Southern Europe and North Africa.
Yeah, well, I found out in mine I'm 6% Jewish. So I mean, yeah, that.
Well, I didn't get that.
Wait a minute.
It is interesting, yeah, though, that I can see lots of books coming out that will use a premise.
I tell you, I got into her book, and it fascinates you. Mm-hmm. It just truly, truly does. And it's just, grabs you.
I went online and popping in the names of places, you know. There's a monastery, we won't give anything away, but right. I thought, oh, I wonder. And then I went, and sure. And here's how you get a tour there. This is, you know.
I know. You know, you go to a place, and I was going to Google as I was reading your book, and I was, yeah, all these places are real.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Really fun.
Well, and, you know, the cool thing is, too, so much of what used to be Eastern Europe has opened up, Croatia, mm-hmm, all through the Balkans, what used to be the Yugoslavia. And so many of those places have opened up. We can go now, and they've become good tourist spots for the most part. You know, and Croatia, like I said earlier, it's just, from what I understand from my cousins tell me, who would vacation there from Italy, it was cheap, it was cool, and, you know, the food was great. It was really got a great place to go.
Okay. You go to a country, you learn about the people, eat the food.
That's right.
I can go to my grandmother's
Italian
house and
Come
do
on,
that.
Jim.
So I have one thing for you. Of course, the iconic Brady house is for sale. 1.9 mil, and you can live in that house.
Yes. Matter of fact, they're trying to sell it to someone who won't tear it down.
And it is two bedrooms. I don't know how the Brady's ever lived in two bedrooms, but three bathrooms, 2,477 square feet, 1.9 million. You two can own the Brady house. And one last thing before I go, King Tut. We just went through this on KWTF radio. King Tut. Everybody thought that he was such a handsome young guy and a warrior. Nah. King Tut was a club-footed cripple. He was ugly and riddled with disease. His parents were also his aunt and uncle. Go figure. The fact that he died such beautiful stuff was the fact that they were trying to make him look better. But then they buried him really deep so nobody would ever find him. Probably because he was so ugly. Okay.
Was he 14 when he died?
19.
He was 19.
They sold the ghost.
He was 19.
Yeah, 19 years old when he died. Okay, next week we're doing our first international phone call, guys. What is his name? I have it here. It is Peter James. You guys have gotten the book by now. It's like almost 600 pages. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
It's a Russ night.
Oh, that's right. You didn't get it. Yeah, well, we're doing our first international call. He's in England.
Cool.
And then the following week, I don't know who is here, but that's okay. After Peter James, I think I'm going to retire. Okay, that's it for us. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer Brock. Thank you all so much for listening, for showing up and turning on your radios or listening to podcasts. And with that being said, for Bob and Jerry and me and Bobby Jean,
bye-bye.
What's the thing? Bye-bye. We're out of here.